thank you for joining us live on Wisconsin Public Radio for this year's State of the Tribes Address. I'm Keely Boltina.
And I'm Dean Knetter. We'll bring you to the speech in the Wisconsin State Capitol as soon as it begins. This year, we'll hear from President John Johnson Sr. of Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians. This is the 17th annual State of the Tribes Address.
The speech is a tradition that grew out of a need. The tribes and Wisconsin legislative leadership started this annual address to improve communications between our governments. Ahead of the address, we're talking about what's going on today and what issues are likely to come up this year. And Dean, you're keeping tabs on the event. What are you seeing so far?
Well, Keely, the action today is happening in the Assembly Chamber. Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss just took a roll call of lawmakers. We also saw a Veterans Color Guard process into the chamber carrying flags of Wisconsin's recognized tribes. Before we came on the air here, they were marching around the Capitol building itself, and now they have entered into the chamber. We also had an invocation from tribal member Leon Valier. He mentioned all of the lives that were lost during this year to the COVID-19 pandemic. And two young members of Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa led lawmakers in the Pledge of Allegiance. We are also expecting some introductions of state officials, Governor Evers, perhaps members of his cabinet. Speaker Voss may introduce them and then turn things over to President John Johnson Sr.
All right. And we mentioned that this is the 17th State of the Tribes Address. Why did Wisconsin start this back in 2005?
It has been going every year since then. In a statement last week, Speaker Voss called it an assembly tradition. And it really came out of a desire for better communication between the state and tribal governments. It lets lawmakers and the public hear directly about the issues that really matter to Wisconsin's First Nations. On one hand, it serves as kind of an update on what's happening across the tribes, what's gone well, what's challenging. Ahead of today's speech, John Johnson Sr. said, quote, "My goal today is to help create greater understanding of Native people, culture, and traditions. At the same time, it's an opportunity to point out some policy areas where there's overlapping interest with the state government, issues where the state and the tribes could work together."
All right, Dean, thanks for that, and we'll let you pay attention to what's happening in the Wisconsin State Assembly. It appears Speaker Robin Voss has introduced Governor Tony Evers, and we will go ahead and go to the speech right now.
So this has been a long tradition in the legislature to hear from the First Nations and the opportunity for them to make sure that we understand the role that they play in governing structure in Wisconsin, but also the special issues that address our Native American tribes. We have always enjoyed the opportunity, and today is no exception. Today's presentation will be given by John Johnson Sr., the president of the Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians, who will address the members of the legislature. Let's give him a warm round of welcome.
And President Johnson is walking up to the lectern now in the assembly, and Speaker Voss and the president are speaking, and now he begins.
Hello, my name is John D. Johnson, Sr. My Ojibwe name is Wane Wantane Gijik. It means when night time and the morning meet for the first time at the break of day. I also am honored to be standing here before you all today as president of Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians, or Wiswaganeen. Our reservation covers parts of Vilas, Iron, Oneida counties. This 12 by 12 plot of land was negotiated under U.S. treaties of 1837, 1842, 1847, and 1854. These treaties established and reserved a home for our people. About 67% of the land remains under tribal member and descendant ownership, with non-Native people owning the rest. Our tribal members number 4,070, and descendants total 4,114. As a tribe, our mission is to provide leadership for the betterment of tribal membership and descendants in areas of health, education, welfare, economic, and job development, as well as the protection of natural resources. This mission, or some close version of it, is shared by the tribes in attendance today. I'm particularly grateful for the faith and confidence of my fellow leaders. Speaking on behalf of the 11 tribal nations living within what's now known as Wisconsin is a great opportunity and responsibility. With this in mind, my goal today is to help create greater understanding of Native people, culture, and traditions. I'm hopeful this helps clear a path for the next leg of our journey. Where we work together to build a secure future for all who reside in Wisconsin. Without security for all, we all face insecurity. Miigwech means thank you to Assembly Speaker Robin Voss for the invitation to address this chamber. The decisions made in the state legislature have tremendous impact on our tribal nations, and our nations have tremendous impact on the state, which is why it is so important our nations and legislative leaders engage in meaningful consultation beyond this day and throughout the year. Thank you to the state and assembly leadership, Senate President Chris Kapenga, State Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu, Senate Minority Leader Janet Bewley, Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke, Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hintz. Thank you to the Supreme Court Justices. Honorable Supreme Court Justice Annette Ziegler, congratulations on your recent promotion to Chief Justice. Honorable Supreme Court Justice Patience Rogensack, Rebecca Bradley, and Brian Hagedorn. I'm glad you are here. It's imperative the Supreme Court continue to research racial disparities in the legal system. We appreciate the work done in a recent report that found Native men are 34% more likely to end up in prison than their white counterparts in similar charges. This is according to the Office of Research Justice for the Courts in a reported title, Race and Prison Sentencing in Wisconsin. I'm hopeful this and other efforts lead to a fairer and equitable system of justice. I'd also like to thank Governor Tony Evers, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, and Attorney General Josh Call. Your commitment to supporting our federal treaty rights is much appreciated. This is an ongoing challenge for our nations. Your support and for our court-affirmed treaty rights and many other areas of concern is helpful in overcoming generations of misunderstanding and mistreatment of our people. These are rights we negotiated in exchange for ceding or entrusting millions of acres of land to the federal government. Many people inaccurately believe our nations were given these rights by the federal government. In fact, we paid a high price for these rights. Loss of life, loss of liberty, loss of identity. Yet sadly, we must continue to defend these rights generation after generation. Thank you as well to the Superintendent of Public Instruction, Carolyn Stanford Taylor, for being here today. I would also also like to recognize all the tribal elders and youth, ancestors, Ogechida veterans, cultural leaders, tribal members, employees, and staff, with a special miigwech to everyone who works every day to conquer this COVID pandemic. I offer my sincere sympathy to the life lost to this terrible pandemic. This pandemic has hit hard the most vulnerable people. This includes our elders and those with susceptible health conditions within our communities. We cherish our elders and care for our community members. As you will hear in this address, our communities reflect a culture of taking care of each other. To that end, it is important we discuss a challenge wrapped within the pandemic that isn't grabbing many headlines these days. It's an increase in drug overdoses during the pandemic. Fentanyl and meth remain an issue that impacts our entire region. Drugs are killing people in northern Wisconsin and across the country. Drugs don't discriminate, and neither do we when prosecuting anyone found involved in dealing drugs within our jurisdictions. Yet the flow of drugs into the Northwoods has escalated during the pandemic as mental health, economic, and social challenges exert growing pressure on our people and families. For years, the tribe has advocated and pursued strong enforcement and strong prosecution of criminals. We have partnered with county governments on drug courts and reentry programs to help fight repeat offenses, creating a path forward for a healthy, productive life. As we will continue to fight drug abuse and related illegal activities alongside our region, state, and federal partners. And as being tribal chairman of Lac des Flambeaux, when I we have that MRT program down in Vilas County, I think it's the only one in the state where they have drug rehab in there. And I make it a point when somebody graduates to show up there, whether they're tribal or non-tribal. And I was thinking maybe it'd be better if some of the other leadership showed up as a, you know, also from the different counties levels and stuff. You know, because we got to give our people a little bit of hope somewhere down the line, you know, and it's always a good thing. And some people succeed when they come out of there. We offer them jobs back home, you know, we offer them a place to stay. You know, we try to make things right so that this doesn't happen again. But I just wanted to mention that for our people back home who are struggling. It's important, however, that we recognize this not only as a native issue. Drug abuse of both prescription and illegal substances is a growing threat across the Northwoods. To help in the fight, we believe the money allocated in the state budget for a Northern Wisconsin Regional Mental Health and Treatment Facility will add a crucial building block in the foundation of dismantling the scourge of drugs. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the recent shooting that continues to impact the lives of our Oneida tribal members. This only reinforces the need for expanding mental and behavioral health services. This is an event we see repeated across the United States. It can call at any one of our doorsteps. At this time, I would like to take a moment of silence and remember those we lost during this pandemic. Before I jump into the heart of the State of the Tribes address, I want to welcome and thank leaders of the 11 sovereign tribal nations residing within the borders of Wisconsin. Their leadership as part of the Great Lakes Intertribal Council impacts the lives and the futures of natives and non-natives alike. Please welcome the 7 tribal nation leaders here today. President Shannon Halsey of Stockbridge Muncie Community. Just so everybody knows, it's her birthday also. So.
Happy birthday.
Chairman Mike Wiggins, Jr. of Bad River Bend.
Of Lake Superior, Chippewa Indians.
Chairman Gunnar Peters of the Menominee Indian Tribe of Wisconsin. President Marlon White Eagle of the Ho-Chunk Nation. Chairman Ned Daniels, Jr. of the Forest County Potawatomi Community. Chairman Robert Van Zyl, Jr. of the Scoggin Chippewa Community. Vice Chairwoman Lorraine Gauger of La Porte Orioles. Coudray.
Thank you.
And our Chief Executive Officer, Brian Bainbridge of the Great Lakes Intertribal Council. And I also want to throw a team Igwitch out there for my wife, Susan, and my grandsons for being here with me on a special day. You know, this makes us... I would also like to acknowledge the important roles and impact representatives of the following have on the state of Wisconsin and our nations. State Tribal Relations Committee and Tribal Caucus. Tribal Council members and administration. Tribal business and facility managers. Tribal housing authorities, including all employees who provide the foundation of support needed to keep our tribal organizations functioning and moving forward. If I have missed anyone, please know there are many dedicated individual partners and organizations who work hard to build a promising future for our Native people, as well as for non-Native people who live, work, and play within and around the boundaries of our sovereign borders. On behalf of the Lac du Flambeau Ojibwe Nation, Great Lakes Intertribal Council, it is an honor for me to speak and represent the tribal nations that have cared for and protected these lands for thousands of years. So here's my address. The story of our people is diverse and dynamic. We are 11 separate nations formed in shared experiences and built on various foundations. We have an inherent treaty rights, self-determination, and self-governance. These powers allow us to establish and regulate what happens within our lands and boundaries of our reservations. An accurate way to think of our lives as Native people is to imagine walking in two worlds. Tribal members are both U.S. citizens and members of their own sovereign nation. We cherish Native traditions, but the love of country is equally apparent in many ways. Most apparent is our commitment to serving in the U.S. military. Tribal members, generations after generations, take profound pride and honor in serving and protecting the United States. Our per capita participation rate serving and defending this country is unmatched. In fact, the most famous military bird in American history came from Waswanipi area, now known as Lac du Flambeau Indian Reservation. Better known as Old Abe, the Eagle now makes a home right here in the State Assembly Chamber. Old Abe is a Civil War legend and Lac du Flambeau's most famous eagle. He oversees every action in his chamber. This is why we're wearing this today. This is why we're carrying this today. 1861, the Lac du Flambeau Indians were on their annual spring expedition into the maple sugar bush of northern forests. Chief Sky, the son of Thunder of Bees, encountered two baby eaglets way up in the pines and took them down. As the people traveled downriver, they came upon the home of Dan McCann, to whom they gave the baby eaglet, who would one day become the famous old Abe. McCann cared for this eagle until it became older, decided to represent the special eagle to the Union soldiers of Wisconsin. McCann presented Old Abe to the 8th Wisconsin Regiment at Eau Claire. After accepting the eagle, the company changed their names from the Badgers to the War Eagles, and Old Abe served as their mascot for many years. As a part of the War Eagle Company, Old Abe became more famous each day and provided a great source of pride to the men of the Wisconsin 8th. Abe was carried into battle on a perch in the same way as the American flag. He withstood battles in Wisconsin, Illinois, Mississippi, Alabama, and Tennessee. After the war ended, Abe traveled across the country and attended national conventions, centennial celebrations, and many major events. Over the years, Abe had been awarded honors by the U.S. government for military services. This famous bird was born in the beautiful north country of Lac du Flambeau, just west of Minocqua, which means an area, which remains an area still abundant with bald eagles. Old Abe was found by Chief Sky and then spent his life with the brave soldiers and the historical leaders of the United States. As I mentioned earlier, my goal for this address is to help create a greater understanding of Native people, culture, and traditions. To do this, we must correct some of the greatest misunderstandings of our people, our culture, and our traditions. There are many enduring characterizations of Native people. For a variety of reasons, these characterizations pass from generation to generation. No culture is understood without some effort. No tradition is appreciated without experiencing it. And no one can overcome history without understanding and acknowledging and working to create a prosperous, peaceful future for all of our children. To this end, I offer an open invitation to each of you to visit and experience our culture and traditions. Just travel north to Minocqua, hang a left, and you'll be in Flambeau. Our people continue to be viewed through a variety of lenses. One persistent lens focuses solely on race and color of our skin. Another lens on our culture and traditions, yet another lens focuses on economic and social challenges. When looking through these lenses, some of the challenges are unique to our people. Many of the challenges are shared by us. Overcoming these challenges require all of our efforts. The state of Wisconsin and our nations all stand to benefit. This is precisely the reasoning behind Executive Order 39, which remained in effect under Governor Walker, continues under Governor Evers. Governor Evers reissued his own as Executive Order 18. Thank you, Governor. Executive Order 39 or 18 recognized the sovereignty of the 11 tribal governments in Wisconsin and a unique government-to-government relationship between state and the tribes. I'm persistent, right? We have some conversation. I just keep repeating until he hears me, which is a good thing. Yep. carry out this order, the State Tribal Consultation Initiative was established. The initiative is a comprehensive program aimed at increasing the ties between state agencies and tribal governments to streamline and improve the services that governments provide to both tribal and non-tribal members. The State Tribal Consultation Initiative has this at its bottom line goal, improving government services and economic development to both tribal communities and the citizens of the state of Wisconsin to save valuable taxpayers' money. When we call for meaningful consultation with the state government, we seek to achieve more efficient, effective use of taxpayers' dollars to protect and benefit what we love about our state and our nation. For all of us to collaborate to create a prosperous future for all, we must continue to work together. We must find common ground that overcomes historic wrongs, race, culture, traditions, and history. All plays a role in our ability to collaborate across cultures on issues impacting future generations. Our worlds often share a common purpose and sometimes clash. Clash dominates the headlines. Collaboration, as I'm sure you can all attest, rarely does. In an effort to create greater understanding, I thought I would share insights on some of the mischaracterizations of Native people and tribes. Let's start with how we govern ourselves as Native people. One of the biggest misconceptions about tribes involves the impact of casino has on the health and wealth of a tribe. Tribes do not have a traditional tax base to generate government revenue. Many people think any tribe with a casino sits on the top of never-ending pile of cash. There's a wide range of factors that determine how far casino revenue goes towards self-reliance. However, some tribes are better off than others. But most people fail to realize casino revenue supports much of the tribe's government services. Many of those services like roads, bridges, public safety, sewer, water, and others are enjoyed by Native people and non-Natives alike. When you consider that casino revenue makes possible all the tribal services typically associated with the national government, the revenue stream quickly reaches its limits. Economic support, homeless shelters, land management, housing, medical, dental, education, cultural entities, and just about every other service you would associate with governing is provided by the tribes. While Lac-Da-Flambeau tribe is one of the three tribal communities that are among the poorest rural communities in Wisconsin, it's important to understand the revenue generated through these casinos directly funds our infrastructure. Much of it is open to both Native and non-Native peoples. Our health clinic and dental clinic are open to all peoples. Our employment opportunities are open to all people. In fact, roughly half of the 800 employees across our entire tribal enterprise are non-Native. This is a significant contribution to the local economy and job creation in Vitus County. We are the largest employer in our region. This is true of most of the 11 tribes and their communities. Underwritten largely by casino revenues, some of our programs and services even reach beyond tribal boundaries to benefit the greater community and the region as well as the state. Some recent examples of Lac-Da-Flambeau include planned construction of a workforce development and training center. We're supposed to be doing the groundbreaking on that this Thursday, I believe, at 1 o'clock. Partnering with Hunger Task Force to serve as a regional distribution hub for all people to access food during the pandemic. And that's been going very well. We've seen hundreds and hundreds of people coming into the reservations and, you know, our tribe supporting them. Completion of the state-of-the-art wastewater treatment facility used by all people residing within the reservation, which includes Native and non-Native people, to protect waterways and lands from pollution, and a recently completed new food market for all to shop and enjoy local access to a wider selection of food, fuel, and more. Natives and non-Natives visiting and living in on the reservation benefit from other tribal investments also. Existing investments by the tribe include a health and dental clinic for all to access, quality care, 96-strand fiber optic cable running through our business park throughout the downtown area to give existing and new business confidence in our ability to provide technology foundations needed for businesses that are considering relocation or expansion to Lac des Flambeaux, who Kumis and Dodd, or grandmother's house, is a residential treatment facility to keep people within the community to overcome their challenges, ensuring family support to improve the likelihood of their success. And of course, our fish hatchery, which supplies hundreds of thousands of walleyes and muskie to restock lakes for all to enjoy. These are but all a few examples of our investments in Lac des Flambeaux. In short, tribal nations provide a regional, economic, cultural, and social investments impacting all people. Let's talk a little bit more about the natural resources. One of the biggest misconceptions is that Ojibwe walleye harvesters are depleting the lakes. However, the facts don't support this belief. When it comes to natural resources, harvesting walleyes is one of many hot topic button issues, yet it is a tradition we have sustained for thousands of years. In fact, Lac des Flambeaux translates to Lake of the Torches. These torches were viewed by French explorers on our namesake lake while spearing fish to feed their communities. This traditional harvest is codified in rights affirmed by courts and outlined in treaties. Still, we continue to be harassed every season. This is unacceptable. It is important to understand federal treaty rights. It's impossible to understand those rights without understanding how Native people paid for those rights. We ceded or entrusted millions of acres of land. My tribe, the Lac des Flambeaux, now live on a 12 by 12 mile reservation. Our rights to hunt, fish, and gather extend beyond the reservation borders. We negotiated the right to observe our cultural traditions over larger parts of the ceded territory, the millions of acres of land we once served as stewards and protectors. We are often asked, what do you do with all these fish? I was taught we do not take more than we need. I'm teaching my young grandsons right now, in which I have already taught my kids also, you know, that spearing is we provide for our elders in our community, single moms, you know, just anybody that can't get out and do it. So, you know, if I go take 100 fish, I might keep two or three of them for our family. The rest go to our community. We have a lot of services for funerals and, you know, cultural events and stuff. So we all take care of one another back home. We do it in a good way. You know, people are, and during this pandemic, we're struggling to eat, you know, and stuff like that. And the harvest levels, I guess, that we have over in Lac des Flambeaux they're not outstanding, but they came up there a little over 18,000 this year for 4,000 tribal members. If you took that and divided it, you'd get like 4.2 fish per person. So, you know, this is what we're doing in our communities to help one another. We harvest, hunt, fish, and gather wild rice and other foods dependent on a healthy ecosystem. We share these life-sustaining resources with our community. Wasting resources considered disrespectful and unacceptable in our culture. Yet our tribal members, when we do this, we're still harassed every year. Threatened, sometimes we're shot at, you know. or even assaulted for harvesting fish, other resources to provide for our communities. Even though we restock countless lakes and fish and seek to protect, manage, and sustain natural resources for future generations, this behavior stems from ignorance. I'm hopeful this speech helps make progress to a day where the facts determine the behavior of some of our neighbors and not misunderstanding or ignoring the facts. Saying we take more resources than is sustainable and that tribes are the reason walleye populations are strained is simply untrue. Let me share how we go about managing our harvesting levels. We invest in our own fish hatchery to restock lakes as many as our other tribes do also, both on our reservation and off reservation, and how we work with organizations like Walleyes for Tomorrow to limit harvest to protect and allow species to revive. But first, some fishing facts and common misinformation. These are important, so take notes. There will be a quiz, not here, but somewhere someone will bring up fishing and perhaps spearing. You will need these facts to change the misperception that persists. Now, this is the DNR estimate. Sport anglers hook and line harvested 260,000 to 300,000 fish a year. All the treaty tribes in northern Wisconsin, we take 31,000 for the year. So you add that up, you know, it's not very much what we're doing. But we use that to sustain our life. You know, the tribes along with the Great Lakes Fish and Wildlife Commission, wardens and biologists carefully monitor lake populations to assure safe harvesting will take place each spring. Every night, creel teams are posted at the boat landings to carefully collect data, including the number of individuals spearing, how many boats went out that night, the number of permits given out. The creel team also recorded the nightly catch report, which records the number of fish taken, as well as the sex and the size of the fish. For decades, some of this false narratives about spearing continue to survive. People often think, since the treaties were signed in the 1800s, that only methods and equipment relative to that time period should be utilized. However, there's no language within the treaties that binds these signatories to the time period of harvesting and equipment. And we probably would do it that way. I know my friend here, Mr. Leon Valier, and my little brother, they spear from a canoe, but how can he got a spear from a canoe when somebody's trying to swamp you with a big boat, you know? But we do try to pass these traditions on to our children. In fact, most documents signed by the United States Federal in the 1800s, including the Constitution, did not bind people in the same time periods. Ojibwe U.S. treaties are a two-way street, and to freeze hunting and fishing technology in the ceded territory would limit state outdoorsmen to cane poles and single-shot rifles or shotguns and muskets. Other common misperception about treaty rights is that the treaty rights are somehow special rights given to tribal members. This is also false. Like a real estate contract, Ojibwe bands insisted on a land use contingency to maintain and access natural resources. The U.S. judicial system recognized that the Ojibwe chiefs successfully negotiated harvesting privileges for band members. The courts have repeatedly reaffirmed these rights. Ojibwe nations have been a fixture in the North Woods for some 400 years. Spearfishing and netting are both sustainable fishing practices that have helped the subsistent communities survive and raise families in the lake country of the Upper Great Lakes region. Our ability to hunt, fish, and gather is directly impacted by the health and sustainability of earth, air, and water. Our culture honors and seeks to protect, manage, and replenish resources. We make decisions, for example, based on the impact our actions will have on descendants 7 generations from now. This drives our determination to preserve, protect natural resources, not only for Native communities, but for all who live, work, and play in Wisconsin. Of natural resources to Native people cannot be overstated. For hundreds of years, natural resources have sustained us. We continue to live close to the land and see changes that are impacting all of us. Take mining, for example. Mining is a constant threat to the environment and local economies that remain long after the mine gives up its treasures. Local taxpayers foot the bill for costly, persistent environmental damage. We welcome economic development. We welcome jobs. We are willing, however, to sacrifice the health of life-sustaining natural resources, earth, air, and water. Without these, we all cease to exist. Until there are proven protections in place for public health, safety, and natural resources, mining must be rejected as a common threat to all. We know for certain a Flambeau mine, which mining proponents say is a successful mine, is responsible for Flambeau River tributaries currently being classified as impaired and toxic, according to the Wisconsin DNR. Think about your favorite Wisconsin vacation spot. Would you want your children swimming in acid lakes and rivers? Would you eat fish from polluted waters? The DNR has issued fish health advisories warning people about eating fish in every area across the state. This is a constant fight to protect and preserve natural resources. It is a battle with many fronts. Mining is just one. As a tribe, our environmental standards exceed federal and state standards for environmental protection. For hundreds of years, we have taken up the charge to protect and preserve the environment for generations yet to experiencing these life-sustaining natural resources. A while back, John Torinus, a successful business leader in West Bend, Wisconsin, wrote an insightful piece on economics and environment. Somehow, he writes, some have brought the erroneous theory that the environment and economy are an either-or proposition. Nothing could be more wrong. Advances for the economy and environment are complementary, not competing. We agree. Wisconsin Northwoods depends on a $20 billion tourism industry. This reoccurring revenue is a major sustainable economic engine for all of us. Tourism depends largely on the health and natural resources. There are many threats to natural resources which we reserve as a foundation for our tourism industry, and the billions of dollars are at risk as a result. Forever chemicals within our water supply, chronic waste and disease is another in our deer population, mercury and other contaminants in our fish supply, rising temperatures heating our waterways, leading to algae blooms, choking out fish populations and other aquatic life, reducing wolf populations to dangerously low population levels, and eliminating their contribution to wildlife sustainability. These threatened our prosperity and our futures. Chronic waste and disease, for example, remains a clear and present danger, especially when you consider the current pandemic. COVID-19 demonstrates very clearly and very real damage caused to for collective health and wealth by a virus that spreads uncontrollably. CWD is a threat. From the perspective of tribal traditions and culture, we share much of that when we harvest. We share the deer we harvest with the elders and others to help make ends meet. But beyond our own self-interest is an interest for the greater good. The spread of the disease must be stopped by all means necessary to protect against economic, environmental, and health-related risks associated with the spread of CWD in Wisconsin. Hunt and all who benefit from the millions of dollars generated each year as part of the hunt across the state, we have a stake in stopping this disease. Many deer camps were curtailed or canceled this year because of COVID-19. Without too much imagination, those same deer camps are threatened by CWD. No one will want CWD contaminated meat. There are also some common sense actions we can take to help stop the spread of CWD, and the power to implement those decisions rests squarely on the hands of the legislator. Why do we care so much? The health of the earth, air, and water is at the core of who we are as people. This has been a guiding principle for us well before the United States even existed. We share a deep passion and respect for nature, hunters, fishers, birders, hikers, and all who enjoy the outdoors of Wisconsin. We value clean land, air, and water. We ask all levels of state government to balance economic development and environmental protections. According to our teachings, the Lac-Da-Flambeau and many other tribes make decisions with seven generations in mind. We ask how our decisions today impact those who will come hundreds of years from now. We respectfully ask every level of state government to do the same. Mentioned different lenses through which our people are viewed. One lens views our people solely on race and skin color. Much is made of cancel culture in modern America these days. We proudly stand here before you as survivors of the ultimate cancel culture effort. There's no more enduring assault on a single culture in the United States than the ongoing assault on the culture of Native people. Federal policies, assimilation or extermination towards our culture, attempted to snuff out all semblance of our cultures and traditions. Children forced from their parents' arms, children forced to cut their hair, children beaten into submission for speaking their native language and observing their native culture. As we learn more about the effects of trauma on human beings, we can easily see the lasting effects of those federal policies and how those reverberate throughout our daily lives. Mental health services are desperately needed in Northwoods. Mental health challenges are the underbelly of many problems: homelessness, addiction, unemployment, crime, and the list goes on and on. There's currently a state budget proposed for a mental health facility conveniently located among many tribal nations within Wisconsin. Investment by the state to expand these mental health care access to the Northwoods will pay for itself in countless ways. This is not a plea for sympathy, rather a call for understanding, acceptance, and actions towards a more seamless way to coexist. There are deep differences and disrespect that have festered for generations. These lead to disdain spreading across the cultures. These get all the headlines, perpetrating and poisoning relationships. History is a bear to overcome. Our people are a testament to that fact. Our people are a testament to the tenacity and determination. Our people demonstrate every day their sheer will to succeed in both the modern world and our traditional world. Relentless education of all children is our strongest approach to breaking systemic racism, discrimination, and bigotry repeated generation after generation. Prosecution of hate crimes also helps. Conflict over race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, and other differences only hold us back. The recent passage of Senate Bill 69 deserves applause and support. To your credit, this legislature is a bipartisan effort. Which now requires all schools to educate children about the Holocaust and other genocides. Under the bill, the Holocaust is defined as a systematic state-sponsored killing of 6 million Jewish men, women, and children, and the millions of other Nazi Germany, by other Nazi in Germany and his collaborators between 1933 and 1945. With this in mind, I encourage everyone to realize and recognize systematic state-sponsored killing in a close relative of systemic racism. Looking back through the lenses of history, we can clearly see roots of the Holocaust slowly take a hold of the entire society. The seeds of this horrible strain on history took hold over time. The same can be said with the systemic racism. We have learned from Act 31, adopted by this legislature in 1989, and requiring all state public schools to teach about Native people, passing legislation to require education, remains a great first step. We also need a cultural responsiveness and equity initiatives at every level of the state government to root out and address systemic racism. We ask the legislature. For the legislature's support in training all levels of government and cultural education, inclusivity to create a more representative, informed government. We believe this is another step in making better decisions on behalf of all people calling Wisconsin home. And I'd like to thank you, Governor and Lieutenant Governor Barnes, for the things you've done during your spearing season. But it doesn't just stop there at spearing season. It goes throughout our whole entire year, you know, with people needing to know about their treaty rights and stuff like that. You know, and we raise our little ones, like my grandsons and my nephews here, you know, and sometimes they don't understand what racism really is until they get a little bit older and they get in high school, and it's not fair to them, you know, for grandpa to be teaching them something, and, you know, and somewhere down the line I miss that part where the racism comes in, and I don't really know how to explain it, because, you know, I've had to endure it when I was in school and the service and everything else, but you know what? I don't want to tell these guys about it because it's hateful. You know, it's something we gotta fix. You know, I was telling the governor last night, and I said, if, you know, maybe 35 years from now, these guys will be sitting around in here, or might be a tribal leader, and we're still fighting racism. We should correct that right in here and right now, and just stop it. decade since the passage of Act 31, we've seen a need to incentivize and motivate more robust participation and application to teaching our history. We suspect teaching of the Holocaust and other genocides will experience a similar inconsistent level of teaching and application. Required initiatives to ensure a robust, regular curriculum is enacted. Senate Bill 69 rightly specifies teaching about the Holocaust and other genocides. We hope it includes teaching about genocides involving Native people. The Trail of Tears, where thousands of Native people were forced from their homes, forced to walk hundreds of miles to land yet to be settled west of the Mississippi River. Thousands died along the way. The Trail of Tears is a terrible tragedy and one not unfamiliar to tribes whose leaders gather here today. We endure our own tragedy, the Sandy Lake tragedy. Sandy Lake qualifies in our minds as genocide. Countless Native people from our tribes died walking to Sandy Lake, Minnesota. In 1850, territorial governor and the agent of the Indian Affairs attempted to remove Ojibwe tribes from their homes. The Nat failed. He attempted to lure the tribes to Sandy Lake to personally benefit from having concentrated tribal members in an area where he controlled the resources. He shifted the payments of annuity negotiated as part of the federal treaty signed with the U.S. government in an attempt to trap tribes in Sandy Lake over the winter. Tribal members were informed of the treaty annuity. Distribution site had been changed from La Pointe to Sandy Lake, some 285 canoe miles to the west. If the Ojibwe hoped to receive anything that year, they were instructed to be at Sandy Lake by October 25th, 1850. While band members from Michigan and some eastern reaches of Wisconsin refused to travel, with winter fast approaching, more than 5,500 Ojibwe journeyed into Sandy Lake that autumn. They arrived fatigued and hungry after the hardest journey, only to find no one there, no supplies. Wild game was scarce. Fishing was poor. The high water had wiped out the local wild rice crop for a second consecutive year. For the weary travelers and those Ojibwe who resided at Sandy Lake, living conditions deteriorated rapidly. Over a six-week period, a harsh winter condition set in. BAM members waited near the newly established Indian sub-agency without adequate food or shelter, disease, and exposure ravaged Ojibwe families. More than 150 people died at Sandy Lake from complications caused by dysentery and the measles. A partial annuity payment was finally completed on December 2nd, providing Ojibwe with a meager three-day food supply and no cash to buy desperately needed provisions. The following day, most of the Ojibwe's broke camp, while a few people stayed behind to care for those too ill to travel. With the canoe routes frozen and over a foot of snow on the ground, families walked hundreds of miles to get back home. Another 250 people died on that bitter trail, and the Ojibwe vowed never to abandon their villages in Wisconsin and Upper Michigan for Sandy Lake. These types of experiences and countless others build upon themselves, undermining the foundation of our people who flourished in what's now known as Wisconsin. The federal government has played a major role in our history. Much of it is a dark, traumatic history based on policies executed by the U.S. Department of Interior. This is why people are thrilled to have Deborah Hallen, the first Native person to lead the Department of Interior, as secretary. It's important to have diverse perspectives to understand and shape policies, keeping in mind those affected by the department's policies. When our people look for role models who walk in two worlds, successfully serving both worlds, Secretary Hallen gives us hope. She gives us representation in both worlds. The hope is we can create greater understanding that impacts our ability to coexist better in both worlds. All of us together, yet there's work to be done. As proud and hopeful as we are about Secretary Hallen rising to cabinet position in the federal government, here at home we remain saddled with school districts who refuse to retire race-based mascots. Getting rid of those race-based elements is possible, though. Most recently, we collaborated with our neighbors in the North Woods to change the name of Squaw Lake. I know from my own experiences, I've been on council for like 6-7 years now, and but before this had been tried for almost 30 years to get this name changed. And the people that we talked with on the Lakes Association came forward with us when we spoke about it, and it was a great thing that we collaborated together. And I'm very proud of the two men that made it happen on the Lakes Association side, because they did all the legwork around the lake. Even though there was a few racist people that still think it should stay the same, the rest of them said, you know, Galween, no, we need to change this now. So that's a very proud day for us. And when things settle down a little bit, it finally starts to warm up in northern Wisconsin, we're probably going to have a little ceremony for that lake and our women back home, which we hold high regards for our women, and that lake name was very derogatory towards them. So everybody is welcome when we get that set up. Yeah, it was sunny down here. It was snowing on the way down yesterday. I don't get it. So think of the worst names somebody could call your wife, your mother, your daughter, your sister, your aunt, niece, and granddaughter. That's what Squaw means to the Native women and girls. All women and girls deserve to be treated with respect and held in high regards. All women and girls deserve to live within an environment free of disrespectful terms and imagery. And as always, I was told from one of my friends from Mole Lake, old man Fred Ackley, that, you know, if it wasn't for our women here, all of you, none of us would be here, none of us men, you know. So I want to roll that highest regard and that respect for our women, you know. With our non-Native neighbors to change the lake name was to replace the disrespectful name with a name that holds women in high regard. At first, you know, we came up with a name right away. It was four letters. It was Ikwe, meaning woman. So we put that on the paperwork, got it all set out, and Wisconsin geographical people, then they came back and the Lakes Association chose their own name, which would be Amber Lake, because of the stained waters there. So which worked out for us. It was like a last minute name we just put on there, but it all worked out good for our people back home. We believe everyone can agree there is offensive terms in every language that should not be used to describe women and girls. Squaw is one of those terms. The lack of respect and dignity extends beyond a offensively named lake. However, the shame of seeing it every day and the self-image impresses on Native girls and women. Unacceptable. It leads to harmful reflex effects beyond poor self-worth. It underpins a significant trend we are seeing towards greater numbers of murdered and missing Native women. There are people who believe here that we are less than human. They believe it is acceptable to murder, rape, and abduct Native women and girls. This and many other reasons drive our ongoing efforts to retire offensive and demeaning names and mascots. This is not an act of political correctness, as some would describe our efforts. It's a very real threat to our people and our ability to achieve and contribute fully to both worlds we walk in. There's some progress towards eliminating offensively racially based mascots. The National Football League Washington franchise stopped using the blatantly disparaging logo and team name that portrayed Native people solely on basis of skin color. With hundreds of millions of dollars associated with their brand and an owner who strongly rejected changing the team name and logo, that seemingly impossible became possible. All tribes within Wisconsin reject discriminatory mascots in their strongest possible terms. We respectfully call on all organizations and schools who represent their entities using racially offensive mascots to retire this discriminatory images. Sadly, racially based mascots remain an unhealed wound for countless Native Americans who endure being portrayed as something less than human. Any and all Native mascots, regardless of intent, portray us as subhuman. No other community would tolerate, nor should they tolerate, being portrayed in derogatory terms. Racially based mascots weaken certain segments of our society, thereby our communities. The argument for keeping Native mascots, however, often centers on the respectful manner, historical significance, and point of pride that communities take in being known as an Indian or in a way that on the very heritage we value. We encourage communities to walk in our shoes, envision how you identify with society and how it would feel being viewed and capture in your identity. When your children walk out the door, when they arrive at school, what do they see every day? Do they see something they can be proud of, or do they see something that makes them feel small and ashamed? We are grateful for the effects of those who will see value in all human beings and who fight for all to be respectfully represented in our schools and other organizations where lifelong perceptions are formed. Those perceptions are instrumental in determining how strong and how weak the fabric will be within all communities. Many of the clashes among cultures originate from long-held beliefs born from understanding and misinformation. Creating greater understanding and clarifying inaccuracies and ending misrepresentations require opportunities such as this one, the State Annual Tribes Address, in front of the Wisconsin legislature. But it also requires strengthening of legislation like Act 31 to ensure consistent teachings of sovereign rights to our tribes. This opens a dialogue and misunderstanding of how we can coexist. how we can walk in two worlds with a sense of pride and the purpose of both worlds. The history of Wisconsin and the United States, for that matter, cannot be told without the contributions of Native people. I will leave you on a positive note that illustrates one of many contributions to the history of the state of Native people. One of the highlights of our nation's and for the state of Wisconsin during the pandemic is recognized by National Endowment for the Arts of Wayne Valier. Wayne is one of the canoe builders that built that beautiful canoe, and he won a National Endowment Award. He's actually the younger brother of Mr. Leon Valier here. His Ojibwe name is Minogiji. I'd like to, if you guys could give a hand for his family. A member of the Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. His craft building and birch bark canoe is one of slowly being lost in progress. His passion for keeping his tradition alive by teaching others and sharing stories is why he was recognized for his life's work. Just so you know, he's the same age as I am. He grew up with me, so he's doing good things. And I encourage all of you to view the short video that we have emailed your offices. I hope you find it as moving as I do. Every time I see it, you know, it brings back our history right here to our heart. We have covered much ground here today in an effort to clarify misinformation and create greater understandings in hopes of clearing a path forward for the next leg of our journey. I appreciate your time and look forward to working with you to create a better future for all of us who reside in Wisconsin. Chief Mingwich.
You just heard the 2021 State of the Tribes address. That was John Johnson Sr., who's president of Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians. He wore a mask during this speech to state and tribal leaders. He talked about the pandemic and substance abuse, respect for Native girls and women, environmental concerns. He also spoke about assumptions and racism toward Indigenous people, including Native mascots, and some tribal economic development, and also the relationship between sovereign First Nations and state officials. Those were just some of the points that he made in this annual speech that's happened for 17 years now. It started as one way to improve communication between our governments. You can hear additional coverage of the State of the Tribes address on WPR later this afternoon and tomorrow morning. You've been listening to live special coverage from WPR. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Thanks to WPR producer Dean Kinetter, who joined us earlier in our broadcast. Cheryl Gasser was executive producer with production support from Jennifer Dargan. Tyler Ditter was technical director today here on WPR. I'm Keely Boltina. Now we join your current program in progress. This is Wisconsin Public Radio.